Have you enjoyed listening to the CrowdPaw Leadership Podcast? Are you looking for a way to support it? Maybe you just want some swag. Get some CrowdPaw merch today. We have shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, hats, and so much more. Go to CrowdPaw.org/merch, CrowdPaw.org/merch. Looking forward to seeing your CrowdPaw look.
Important when it comes to improving your speaking skills to actually get up there and do it. You can listen to all the podcast episodes and read all the books, watch all the videos, but you don't get better at it until you actually do it. And then it's really helpful to get the feedback from third parties, but then also taking in your own feedback. That's why I'm a big fan of recording yourself giving presentations, so that you can go back and watch yourself giving the presentation, and you'll notice the various things that you may do that you didn't notice that you were doing in the moment.
Turn this up! Turn this up!
Your professional development is one of the keys to your career success. When you combine your desire to grow with actionable steps, your journey to success becomes an incredible reality.
Hi, I'm Paul Farranby, aka IncredoPaul, and welcome to IncredoPaul Leadership, where we learn how to become the most incredible versions of ourselves by learning from each other. First off, if you're just listening to this episode, you can also watch it on YouTube. But I really appreciate your support whether you're listening or watching this show. Today, I have the honor of having Neil Thompson on the show. He is the founder of Teach the Geek, a platform dedicated to helping technical professionals in their public speaking and communication skills provide ideas more effectively. He has a background in engineering and a passion for empowering STEM professionals. So that was just a little bit about you, Neil. How about you introduce yourself the way you would do it?
Sure. You did a great job, though.
maybe too good.
Thank you for that. I mean, my name is Neil Thompson, as you said, Paul, and I worked in the medical device industry as a product development engineer for a number of years. And I had to give presentations in front of management on a monthly basis. And those first few presentations I gave were absolutely horrendous. I did not know it was possible to sweat that profusely from one's body. And yet there I was doing exactly that. And you would have thought that I'd have got better after that first presentation because I saw the reason why I would need to get better. And the reason was I'd get these questions after the presentation that I thought I'd answered during the presentation, but because I didn't put things in a way that these technical or these non-technical decision makers could understand, now I'm having to answer these questions I thought I had answered. If I was sweating profusely before and during the presentation, then afterwards it was coming down like rain pour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was like rainfall. It was crazy.
A lot of sweat.
It was bad. And eventually my project got canceled. And I realized then that maybe this whole presenting in front of people thing, maybe this is something I need to get better at. And what I ended up doing is sitting in on some of the other presentations given by some of the other project leads, some of the other engineers. And I noticed that, they weren't all that much better at it than I was. So there was definitely something here that perhaps these technical people like myself, we were not the best at putting things in such a way that non-technical people can understand when it comes to communicating with them. And that's where the whole idea of Teach the Geek came from. It came from me just seeing that myself and other technical people weren't the best at communicating with others. And I got better at it over time because I saw the benefit of doing so. And so now with Teach the Geek, I help people like myself with their speaking.
That's a really incredible story. And from what you're talking about, just giving the presentation to sweating a lot to the rainforest of sweat that was happening later. But I think everyone can relate to an experience like that, even people that have been speaking for a long time. The first couple times you speak, you're not really good at it. It takes some time. But the fact that you're intentional and looking at how other people are presenting and learning more, I am curious, like just for the audience to know, like how long have you been doing Teach the Geek and how did you come up with that name?
I started Teach the Geek in 2018 and I actually didn't come up with the name. The initial name was We All Can Be Great Speakers. It was actually, I was talking to somebody, an acquaintance I found on LinkedIn. We were having a conversation. I told her the name of of what I wanted the company to be. And she's the one that suggested Teach the Geek.
Oh, wow.
I thought, actually, that sounds a lot better.
So I changed the name.
Yeah, if I hadn't spoken to that woman, then we wouldn't even be talking about Teach the Geek, I suppose. But yeah, that's where the name came from.
Awesome. So since 2018. So I guess how did you go about finding different people to help, or did they more come to you? I guess what has been the process over the years of Teach the Geek? Did you always have the podcast?
No, actually started off with a YouTube channel. And I used to interview, I interview people with technical backgrounds about their public speaking journeys. And this was pre-pandemic. One of the guests that I had, he said that he actually is the one that suggested I put a podcast together, just basically take the audio of the YouTube videos that I was doing and create podcast episodes. And he said that I should do that because when people are traveling to and from work, they can listen to podcasts, and maybe one of my episodes could be one of the podcast episodes they listen to. And so that's really where the whole podcast came from. Maybe it was like a year and a half after I started the YouTube channel, I actually started the podcast.
Okay. Wow. So you were already basically a YouTuber, and then you converted to a podcast, and now you have both.
Yeah, now I have both, audio, video, whatever way you like it.
That's awesome. So it's really cool that you're able to do that. I know that's how we got connected, because I had the honor of being a guest on one of your episodes of your podcast and share more about my story. And I was like, I want you to have an opportunity to be on my podcast as well, because I think what you're doing is incredible to help empowering STEM professionals, which is a lot of the stuff I do with Incredible, having a lot of people in STEM on the podcast, have entrepreneurs as well. So I'm curious, because I know you said, well, you're working on the pharmaceutical side of things. Has that changed a lot over the years? Or yes, how has becoming better at speaker helped with your technical career?
You know, it's helped tremendously. And something that I eventually came to realize, I wish I'd realized it sooner, but I suppose it's better late than never, is the people who are the better communicators tend to be the people who get the opportunities. And a lot of us technical people think that if we're just good at our jobs, that should be enough. People will notice, and then we'll get opportunities based on that. But oftentimes, that's not what happens. It's the people who are the best at communicating their value to their organizations. Those are the people who tend to get the opportunities. In fact, maybe a couple of years ago, I had a conversation with a woman I used to work with. She's in her 70s now, but she was telling me back when she was in her 20s, when she just started her career, she was working as an engineer. And she thought that if she was just good at her job, that she would get the promotions and the pay raises that she thought she deserved. And she eventually came to the realization that that wasn't the case. And she actually thought that the people who were good at speaking were brown nosing, I suppose. But I don't see it. I don't see it that way. It's just, why would we even think that because we're good at our jobs, people will just notice? People are concerned with themselves. So if you want people to be concerned with you, you better tell them. You better tell them something, or else they're going to go about their way thinking about themselves and actually responding to the people who are speaking to them, asking them about getting more opportunities and moving up within organizations and advocating for themselves.
That's a really good point that you brought up, that really you have to advocate for yourself, and just a key part of communication, which is also a key leadership attribute as well. So you talk about the soft skills, and I really don't like saying soft skills. I call them leadership skills or life skills. These are skills that help whatever you are doing to be successful. And so, like you were saying, like in any STEM career, you can do a lot of things, but if you cannot adequately or articulate what you're saying to non-technical audience, then it's really hard for them to engage with it and understand why what you're doing is important, or even understand what you're doing. I've seen that even with working with different people who present different research opportunities or research posters or research presentations. The key thing is to make sure that your audience understands what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Yeah, 100%. And it's so unfortunate that so many people have a negative connotation when they think of soft skills. I like soft things, like pillows and marshmallows.
Yeah, soft things are good. And honestly, I think, especially with the soft skills, they're not easy skills. I feel like the hard skills or all these technical skills are, maybe they're not easier, but it's more clear to say like, oh, this person is really good at this technical stuff. Whereas the soft skill stuff is really like ongoing, because you might know exactly what to do, but then you're in the moment and you don't do it.
Yeah, and I think also with soft skills, they could be way more subjective. I was a member of Toastmasters for a number of years. And for those of you all listening that don't know about Toastmasters, it's an international organization, chapters all over the world, and its goal is to help people improve their speaking skills. If you were to go to a Toastmasters meeting, there are three parts to it. The first one is called Table Topics, and that's where you're given a question to answer, a question that you didn't know beforehand. And you have a certain amount of time, typically between 1 and 2 minutes, to answer the question. And then the second part of a Toastmasters meeting is the prepared speech, in which someone gives a speech that they prepared. And then the third part is the evaluation, where someone actually evaluates the person who gave the prepared speech. So in the instances in which I was the one giving the prepared speech, the evaluator might say, I really liked your eye contact. But then someone else that's attending the Toastmasters meeting may pull you aside and say, you really need to improve your eye contact. you're getting conflicting feedback. So certainly when it comes to those type of soft skills, mm-hmm. what are you supposed to do in those instances? And I'm a big fan of running any feedback through your own filter to see if it makes sense to you, because ultimately all feedback is just opinions of others.
That's a really good point. All feedback is just opinions of others. And really the subjective part of it is that, yes, like maybe you're making good eye contact with that person, but then the other people in the room feel like you're not making good eye contact with them for whatever reason. Because I think as speakers, like a lot of times we're told to pick a couple friendly faces in the room and act like you're talking to a friend, but then maybe some of the other people aren't as engaging or aren't really as receptive, so you don't focus on them as much, so then they think that you're not having good eye contact, but you're just kind of picking people in the room. I think there's a balance to it.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And if I'm in the audience and you're trying to look at me, maybe you'll stop, because a lot of times I'm not even looking at the speaker, especially if it's a topic that I'm really interested in. I typically will walk with some paper and a pen, and I'm writing things down. So if you're looking at me, you're probably just seeing the top of my head.
Yeah, you're trying to get all the information out. That's good. And I'm glad you brought up Toastmasters. That's something I'm trying to be more intentional about being a part of. My company has Toastmasters chapter, trying to do more there. Over the years, I've been in and out with involvement. My schedule has been crazy. And like a lot of times when I have meetings for different Toastmasters, different parts of the country I lived in, I haven't always been able to make it, but definitely familiar with the process of it, the table topics. So I think the table topics are one of my favorite parts of the meeting, because they're different themes and you don't have to prepare anything. You just kind of talk. And I guess some people are better than others.
Are you wondering what's next? Has everything you tried failed? Or maybe you just feel stuck? Then coaching may be right for you. The coaching relationship is a relationship totally centered on you. So what are you waiting for? Go to incredipaul.org/coaching so I can help you become the most incredible version of yourself.
I know that the whole idea behind it is to talk for like a minute and a half. And the whole evaluation process is talking about not using the filler words and being more intentional about how you're communicating, which that whole evaluation piece is huge.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's important when it comes to improving your speaking skills to actually get up there and do it. You can listen to all the podcast episodes and read all the books, watch all the videos, but you don't get better at it until you actually do it. And then it's really helpful to get the feedback from third parties, but then also taking in your own feedback. That's why I'm a big fan of recording yourself giving presentations, so that you can go back and watch yourself giving the presentation, and you'll notice the various things that you may do that you didn't notice that you were doing in the moment. In fact, I remember one time I was asked to review a presentation by a person that I know, a former client, and it was 40 minutes. And within 40 minutes, he said, about 100 times. And I suspect that he didn't know that in the moment. But then when you actually send them the video and you're able to pinpoint the exact times in which they say, then it becomes way more real. But then at least you have a baseline to work from. So the next time you give a 40-minute presentation, you're going to look to say, less than 100 times, maybe 99.
Yeah. You have a baseline to what you're working with, and you try to go a little bit less.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up actually recording yourself part of the conversation for communication. I think that's critical. That was one of the reasons why I started podcasting is, and why I continue to do it, is to improve my communication skills. I think it's important to record yourself. More important, like you mentioned, is to actually watch it back or listen to yourself, which the first several times that you listen to yourself or watch yourself is very painful. At least it was for me. I don't know, looking back for you, how was that process when you first started to listen to yourself or watch yourself?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, even now, because practice makes progress, you're never perfect. So every time that you watch yourself giving a presentation or listen to yourself on a podcast, you'll notice things that you could have done better. And that's okay, because it's a journey. It's a journey, but there's no destination, really. You never really get there. You're always just going.
Yeah.
but it absolutely is the case where there's always something to work on.
Yeah. With having something always to work on, it can feel overwhelming at times, but I think for me, it's something that is kind of relieving in a sense. I don't know if you agree with this, but this is just my thoughts on it, that success being a journey and not a destination. And John Maxwell talks about this, is that a lot of times with success, we want to get to a destination. But then once you get to that destination, then you're like, what's next? And that's why you have all these successful people that maybe have won all these awards, they are Nobel Prizes, all these things. And then at the end of the day, they're like, everything's like, what is the meaning of all of this? Because they're trying to seek a destination, as opposed to what you're saying, when you have a look at life or success as a journey, then there's always something to look forward to, as opposed to when you have a destination, they're like, okay, what else is there to do?
Yeah, I think you're right. Because just like you said, when you have a goal, and you reach the goal, well, I'm still alive, so now what? I guess let's reach for another goal. Why not?
Yeah. And not to say that you shouldn't have goals, you shouldn't go for things, but I think it's important, as you have those goals, to be more intentional about enjoying the journey, instead of saying that I'm going to be happy when I reach the destination, enjoying the journey itself.
Yeah, it'd be nice if you were happy all during the whole time while you're going there. When you get there, and then when you go for your next thing, and then when you get to that next thing, it's like happiness all around. Why not?
Absolutely. So take a step back to just talk about you and your journey going into the STEM field. Was that always something you wanted to do, or like talk me through growing up and picking what career you wanted? How did you decide on that?
Well, I didn't decide, Paul. And I used to lie about the reason I went into engineering in the first place, because I was a bit embarrassed by the reason. Because oftentimes when people are asked that question, they'll have an interesting answer. Something mm-hmm. like maybe they played with Legos when they were kids, or they took apart the toaster and put it back together. Or maybe when they were in high school, they were part of a robotics club. I never was part of a robotics club. There wasn't a robotics club at my high school. My mother would have been really angry if I took apart the toaster, so I left that alone. And I don't even remember playing with Legos all that much when I was a kid. The reason I went to engineering is because my father said, go into engineering. And I did what he said I should do. After when I finished high school, I didn't really have any plans. I knew I had to go to university because, well, I suppose it was an expectation of my parents. My father said, do engineering. And I said, okay, engineering it is. Luckily, it worked out okay. I mean, I'm not upset I went into engineering, but it definitely wasn't something that I had aspirations to do.
Wow. So something your dad said, do engineering. You just said, yes, sir, and did it.
That's it.
So how did you choose which engineering? Because engineering, I think with anything, things are more broad than people realize. So how did you choose which one you're going to go into?
I was waitlisted for the one I initially chose. And then they said that you could choose this other one, materials engineering, and not be waitlisted. And that's what I went. That's the one I went into.
Okay, now I'm curious, which one of you are waitlisted? What is another version of Neil out there? What would he have been? What type of engineer?
It was a discipline that they called engineering science. And I guess it was a kind of a mixture of all the various, I guess, traditional types of engineering, mechanical, electrical, chemical, a bit of everything. But it was a very competitive program, and I was waitlisted for that. And I was told that you could pick this other one and still get into the school and start. You know, when you want to start, that's what I did.
Yeah. So that's how you became a materials engineer. And then how did you go about getting into more of the, you said like the pharmaceuticals, right?
Yeah, I got a master's in bioengineering. My father had learned about biomedical engineering. I don't even know where, frankly. and he said, do that. So that's what I ended up doing a master's in bioengineering because my father said to do that. And then
there's a common theme here I'm hearing.
Hey, and after that, he said, do a PhD in biomedical engineering. And I started that. I actually went through a whole year of a PhD program. You know, when I started my undergrad, I was 18 years old, just graduating from high school. I had no idea as to what I wanted to do. But by the time I was in the, I finished that first year of the PhD program, I was 25. So this is, you know, wow, I was 25? For real? Okay, yeah, 7 years later. So now I'm thinking, you know what? I'm in my mid-20s now. Maybe this is time to figure out what I actually want to do as opposed to what someone else, even if it is your own parent, tells you to do. And after that first year, I realized I really didn't want to be in a PhD program because for the people who are listening to our conversation, if you do an undergraduate degree, you can finish it in 4 years. It's meant to be finished in 4 years. I mean, certainly you could take longer, but typically if you were to do it you know, year after year, it's a 4-year program. And then if you do a master's, typically it's a 2-year program. So that's 6 years. But PhDs, I mean, they could take 4 years, they could take 5 years, they could take 6 years. I mean, I've known people who've been in PhD programs for 8 years. That's just, they can't seem to graduate because it's a lot more, it's more ambiguous, I suppose. With when you're doing an undergraduate degree and perhaps even with a master's degree, it's all based on courses. Take the courses, pass the courses, get your diplomas or get your degrees. But with a PhD, you have to figure out a novel, you know, course of research to pursue. You have to produce data, you have to put out papers, you have to present a dissertation in front of a committee, and they have to think it's good enough for you to be given a doctorate degree. So there's a lot more moving parts that are involved with getting a PhD. When I thought about that and being in that situation for several years, I really didn't want to go down that path. And then what really cemented it to me is when I went home for vacation, I was for the holidays, Christmas holidays. And I was hanging out with some of my friends from back in my undergraduate days. They didn't do any graduate degrees. So now they all have jobs. They have their own condos. They have their own cars. They're playing poker with money. I had no money to play with them.
Poker with money.
I had no money to play with them. I had no car. I had no condo. I didn't have nothing. I had a scooter. I won the scooter. I won some scholarship money, and I used that money to buy the scooter. Scooter could only go 30 miles an hour. I had to use it in the bike lane. I couldn't even go in the regular lane for cars. I had to remember, this is my life. Nah, I'm done with this. I'm trying to get a job, trying to get some money, trying to, you know, live like an adult. So that's why I decided, you know, I'm gonna do what I want to do right now.
No, that's really important what you mentioned, doing what you want to do, especially because you mentioned at 25, after finishing your first year of PhD school. I think that's also the year, like maybe you know better, 25 is when for guys or males, our prefrontal cortex is fully developed. And I think at that moment, you're like, okay, up until this point, I've been doing what everyone else, maybe my dad, family has been telling me to do. It's worked out okay. But at that moment, you're thinking about, this is, what do I actually want to do? And then you're seeing what your friends are doing, what your friends have achieved. And then I made you question, are you actually doing what you want to do, or are you doing what some people are telling you to do?
Yeah, I mean, frontal cortex, backside cortex, side cortex. I don't know what cortex was working. All I knew is that I didn't want to be poor anymore. This is ridiculous. And as I said, the PhD program takes as long as it takes. You really have no say as to when it's over. It's other people that decide when it's over. And I just thought, nah, man, I just can't get some money go out and eat. I'm tired of beans and rice.
Yeah, you're trying to live. I totally understand that. Try to live, have a car, a house. Yeah, just live, eat. No, that's really important.
Yeah, and also when it comes to even getting a doctorate, when you get to that level where you're getting those terminal degrees, you really need to be there for the right reasons. You need to really think about, if you get this PhD, what are you doing with it? There's so many people that they figure out in their PhD programs. Let's just say when they started it, they wanted to be an academic. They wanted to be a tenure track professor. But when they started it, they didn't realize that the majority of people who get PhDs do not become tenure track professors, not because they don't have the talent to do so. It's just because there's not enough jobs to support all the people that are getting PhDs. So then you get this degree and you have to compete with so many other people who may want that tenure track job. So, and you likely won't get it after just getting the PhD. Now you got to do a postdoctoral fellowship for a year or two or however many years. And you're applying year after year to get that tenure track position, but you're still competing with all the other people that got postdocs. You're competing with the people who are coming out of PhD programs trying to get those tenure track positions too. And it's really difficult. And you may have thought, if I had known all this before I started this PhD program, maybe I wouldn't have finished it, or maybe I wouldn't have even gone through with it in the first place. So then you go to industry, and now you're a PhD in industry. What do we do with the PhDs in industry? We'll put them in the lab. We'll put them in product development. Maybe you don't want to do product development. Maybe you want to move to something else. And then you realize, I didn't need a PhD to go into marketing. I didn't need a PhD to go into sales. But you have this PhD now. Like, what are you going to do? You just have to move forward. So I'm just a big fan of really being, you mentioned the word intentional. It's an important word. You just don't just do things just because. Do things for a really good reason.
Yeah, do things for a really good reason. I mean, it's the whole reason why I have this podcast, is sharing people's stories of how they got to where they were, how they developed their leadership, because I realized that a lot of times we're not intentional, and life kind of happens to us, but then as life is happening to us, there's different crossroads or paths that happen, and then we're intentional in going into those things. I think that's when the magic happens.
Yeah, I agree. That's not to say that you can't change your mind, because you certainly can do that. I mean, there have been many instances in which I started down a path that I meant to go down. But then, once I'm there, I thought, this other thing that this might be something else that I prefer to do instead. And it's okay to make those changes too.
Absolutely. I know it's the same thing with my story about changing my mind and really being open to the different things that you learn, because as you mentioned, like coming out of high school, really trying to pick what you want to quote do for the rest of your life at 18 is not realistic. I mean, there are some people that they go into college, they pick a degree, they come out and they do that for the rest of their lives. But for most people, that is not the case. And so I think for anyone listening to this, whether you're, because this is more geared towards young professionals, maybe you are in the middle of college, or you just got out of college, or in the middle, like maybe your 30s or 40s, and you've been doing something for a while, but you want to do something else, I would say take the time to pursue that. Like, maybe it's not something you're going to be doing full time as your career, but there's also a lot of passion projects, side projects you can do to find fulfillment. I mean, even like what I'm doing, I think there's different layers to it. Like, I still work full-time as an engineer. I do a lot of stuff in podcasting and speaking. I'm a nonprofit. Not to say to do all of those things, because as I'm learning that I have different seasons and times that I do more in different areas, because work-life balance or prioritization is really important, as I've been learning over the last few years. But you can do more than one thing. You can change and do different things as well.
Yeah, 100%, Paul. And you know, you mentioned that my podcast, and what's really interesting is hearing the career journeys. I mean, certainly hearing the public speaking journeys is the main goal, but hearing other people's career journeys is really important, is really interesting, especially the ones who started off in one place and ended up somewhere completely different. In fact, I remember one of my guests in particular, she studied civil engineering, got her degree in it, but never worked as one. She then went to law school, and she worked as a lawyer for about 5 years. Then she was a stay-at-home mom for a decade, and now she works as a personal stylist, helping women with their wardrobes. I mean, you couldn't script that, going from engineering to clothes, but she's happy doing it. And I suspect there might have even been people along the way that would have thought, you have an engineering degree. What are you doing in people's closets, helping them pick out the skirts and blouses and shoes?
Yeah.
But hey, it's what she wanted to do. And I say, you have one life, and so live it as you will.
Absolutely. And from talking with people, and I don't know if this is similar to her story, but I know it was in your story when you mentioned that your dad or family were telling you to do different things. I think a lot of times growing up, we're told that we should do things or we're really good at something, which may be true, but there might be other stuff that have not really unlocked things that we want to do. Because when I was in college, like even 5-6 years ago, if you told me I was going to be a podcaster, I'd have told you, I would ask you, what is a podcast? Like, why would I do that? I'm doing all these other stuff in workshops and speaking. I think I had heard the term, but it didn't really resonate with me. And I was like, that's not really something I want to do, until I got exposed to it. And I realized, oh, this is something I can develop in. And people were telling me I was good at it then. But looking back at those episodes, I'm like, this is, for me, I was like, this is not good. But it's just because I continue to grow and develop and get better at it. So even understanding that there's, even when you start something, you might be a little bit better than people who are just starting, but you still have to put in that work to hone in your gifts and your talents.
Yeah, I mean, I think you had mentioned it earlier, when you start something, it's definitely some growing pains there. I mean, if you start something and you're automatically great at it, well, kudos to you. But for the rest of us mere mortals, when we start something, we gotta improve. There's the practice, there's the reps you gotta put in. I mean, you listen to my first few podcast episodes, they were rough, but I think I would hope to think that I've gotten better at it over time. I've done over 300 episodes at this point. So I wouldn't say it's a well-oiled machine, but it is definitely better oiled than it was when I first started. Back then it was rather squeaky.
Yeah. Well, maybe you're not going to say it's a well-oiled machine. I will say it's a well-oiled machine with the flow of your podcast, the guests you have on there. I think is it weekly, or did you at any point put out episodes more than once a week?
Oh, no. I record the episodes when guests are available, and then I release them once a week.
Once a week, yeah. Because 300 episodes, that's a large body of work. I just hit 100 episodes towards the end of last year, at the end of 2024. And that's after doing it almost about 3 years. So the fact that you're over 300 episodes, still going, still reaching out, still impacting people, that is really incredible.
Thank you. I appreciate the compliment.
Yeah. Well, I know we talked a little bit about your journey, talked about the Teach the Geek. I guess, is there something that maybe, we're talking a lot about STEM professionals, but maybe it only applies to STEM professionals. I think it probably applies to all people. Is there something that you would tell someone that is not good at speaking right now? Like, what is a good place for them to start? I'll just leave it there. Where's a good place for them to start to get better?
Well, Toastmasters is really helpful. I mean, it's a excellent way to at least get a forum to practice giving presentations or just speaking in front of others, becoming more comfortable and confident doing it. and then looking for opportunities even outside of Toastmasters to improve your speaking skills. Because, I mean, that's what it's going to take. It's going to take those reps. And then another thing I would suggest is look at videos of other people giving presentations and see the things that they do that you like, so you can add it to your repertoire. Certainly, I'm not a fan of copying what other people do, because a carbon copy is never as good as the original, but you can always be the best of, you do the best that you can do. And I think you can do that by certainly enhancing what you already have, but then adding what other people do that you like as well.
Yeah, those are really good tips. And you mentioned Toastmasters, and then really honing in on your skills, being like the whole theme of this podcast, being the most incredible version of yourself. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you.
I know we talked about a few different things. Is there anything about yourself, about Teach to Geek, or just in general that you want to tell the audience as we wrap things up?
I mean, sure. When I first started Teach to Geek, it was based on a course, an online course that I developed for our technical people called Teach the Geek to Speak. And it was essentially a six-step process to practice and deliver any speech you had to give. And I initially sold that to technical people, and that's what it was. It wasn't until the pandemic started that I thought, and this, I mean, perhaps it was coincidental, it just happened to be that time, I thought maybe selling it directly to the engineers or to the technical people wasn't the best course of action. Maybe I should be doing more with the organizations themselves. In fact, the goal really was to implore organizations that have technical people on staff to develop speaker training programs for them. And I suspect that if you were to do that, they'd be more likely to engage in such programs. They'd see the benefit, if they don't already, at becoming better communicators. And then they'd even be more, I don't want to say the word useful, but I can't really think of a better word right now, but more useful to their organizations. They're not just those geeks sitting behind their desks or sitting in front of their computers doing their work. They're people that you could actually send out and represent the company.
Yeah.
In fact, it was a few months ago, actually the summer of last year, I attended a technical conference. And one of the talks that I attended was given by the business development person of the company. And afterwards, he received a whole bunch of technical questions that he couldn't answer. Felt kind of bad for him, and then, because it's mostly technical people in the audience. Luckily for him, there were two engineers from his company who were in the audience, and they answered those questions. Basically, they answered all the questions, seated in the audience with me. But the room was small enough that we could hear them answering these questions. I just remember thinking, why didn't one of them give the presentation? It would have made way more sense. But perhaps they weren't comfortable or confident in speaking in front of others, that they didn't do it. The business development person had to do it. But I suspect that if an organization were to have a speaker training program for these people, these technical people, well, then maybe they'd be more comfortable doing it. And then you wouldn't have that business development person sweating bullets having to answer questions from a bunch of engineers.
Yeah. Getting them a lot of technical questions. But yeah, what you're doing with that course, I think it is really important. So how do people, like whether it's an individual or companies, how can they get their hands on that course?
You can go certainly you can get in touch with me if you go to teachthegeek.com, and you can learn more about my podcast at podcast.teachthegeek.com. And if you want to check out the YouTube channel, on the YouTube channel, I also do solo videos on tips on how to give better technical presentations. And you can go to youtube.teachthegeek.com. Teachthegeek.com, if you go there, you can get access to everything.
Awesome. So teachthegeek.com, you get access to all of that. But Neil, it's been incredible having you on this show, what you're doing to empower STEM professionals to be able to deliver presentations to non-technical audience, and just to any audience, I would say, but I think more specifically on the non-technical audience, because as an engineer, as a STEM professional, it's really easy for me and most of us to get into the weeds of different things. But when it comes down to it, a lot of people just want to know what you're doing, why you're doing it, how it impacts them. And I'm sure all the stuff that you're doing with the building those communication skills helps them to take more of a 10,000 foot view of what they're doing, Because when you're in the middle of a project, you worked on it for several months, sometimes years, you get really into the granular things and you can lose people very easily.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right about that, Paul. And I think a lot of us technical people have that issue, is wanting to focus on the features and focus well on the things we think are cool about whatever we're working on. And we fail to realize that the people we're speaking to, they may not care about any of that. They care about how this affects them and how this impacts them. And if we don't present in that way, well, then we're going to lose people. They're going to look at their phones. They're going to look at their laptops. They're going to look off into space. They're going to think about what they're going to have for lunch. And you don't want that.
I feel like I'm always thinking about what I'm going to have for my next meal. So that's just a me problem because I love to eat. I'm definitely a foodie. But no, that's a good point. Thanks for sharing that. And then one other thing I want to say, just as we wrap things up, because I do have a lot of people on the podcast that come that have PhDs and advanced degrees. And we're not saying that you shouldn't go after those degrees. What we are saying is that you should be intentional about the why you're doing it. Because even talking with them, that sometimes the initial reason why, or sometimes they do it just because they didn't know what to do. They go into these degrees and then they kind of move around and change. So it's not that it's a bad thing, but with anything, you just want to be intentional, ask the questions, reach out to people who are in those degrees. Like all the different people on the podcast have made themselves open so you can reach out to them, connect with them on their socials and really understand what is the meaning behind being a PhD. Because like with anything, until you sit down with someone, have them go through an interview, listen to a podcast episode, you really just don't really know.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You know what, Paul? You could have summarized all of that by just saying, don't be like Neil. Don't do what he did. Go into things because you want to do it. You see a reason to do it, and it's going to advance what you want to do in life.
I was not going to say don't be like Neil, as I think we're all like that in a sense, because until you figure out what you really want to do, you're kind of relying on what everyone else is telling you.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I mean, if my father hadn't said anything, who knows what I would have done? Probably just sat on the couch and watch TV and just do nothing. But yeah. I mean, I did something, and as I said, it worked out well. I mean, up until the PhD part. But
yeah.
Then it was like, hey, man, I'm done now.
Yeah. I think the key thing is that PhDs are not for everyone. Like with anything, but I think especially PhDs are not for everyone. I've thought about doing a few different times. And I think the main thing for me is I'm a really intentional person. So I'm trying to figure out if I do a PhD or a graduate degree, where am I going to focus? Because I could do stuff on the engineering side. I thought about stuff like even in psychology or the business side of things. I have just so many different interests. So I read a lot of books. So that's where I get my information from. But the PhD, you have to come up with something new and novel. So that's what's kept me from pursuing it. Also not having the time for it either.
Yeah, I mean, you seem to have a lot on your plate. And adding a PhD to that, you're going to pull off that. You know, other things you do? Hey, man, kudos to you.
Yeah, not right now. I would have to take something off my plate to even attempt doing that.
Yeah, or get a bigger plate or something. I don't know.
Yeah, a bigger plate. I don't know if I can get a bigger plate. I will try.
Yeah, that plate would be so big, you couldn't even put it on the table no more.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to lift the plate. It'd be weighing me down.
You got to get off the floor or something.
It's like, what happened to Paul? It's like, he tried to get a bigger plate.
Yeah, tried to get a bigger plate, broke his back. Try to lift that thing
back. But, it's been a great conversation with you, Neil. Thanks again for taking the time to be on the show.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
Absolutely. And for all of you listening to this episode, I hope you got something out of it. Just understanding that life is a journey. Don't focus on the destination. It's good to have a destination, but don't have that be your only focus. If you do that, keep asking questions, keep trying different things, you can be incredible.
Be sure to rate and review this podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform. We'll see you here next time. And be incredible. 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 Incredible.
Have you enjoyed listening to the Incredible Paul Leadership Podcast? Are you looking for a way to support it? Maybe you just want some swag. Get some Incredible Paul merch today. We have shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, hats, and so much more. Go to incrediblepaul.org/merch, incrediblepaul.org/merch. Looking forward to seeing your Incredible Paul look.